Let's talk first to Bruce Williamson, who's from the campaign group Rail Future. Hello, Bruce.
Evening, Clive.
Do you sympathise with these demos, first of all?
I do. I think there's no doubt that the level of rail fares is way too high in this country. And, you know, compared to our European counterparts, we do have the highest walk-on fares. You know, although the rail companies will point out that the off-peak fares are very cheap in this country, which is true, but of course when you want to travel, you know, you want to travel like when it suits you. You don't necessarily want to have to commit to booking in advance. So, yeah, there's two problems here. The first is the way that the government calculate rail fares, and I think we need to be clear that the blame for this lies squarely with the government. It's the government that set rail fares, and it's the government that sort of set the rules that the train operating companies have to abide by. And what they do, there's two measures of inflation, as you may know, RPI and CPI, and they always use the higher one when it comes to calculating rail fares. And that means that, you know, for your average traveller, that proportion, that chunk of your income which you need to pay for the privilege of going to work and supporting the British economy is getting ever and ever larger. But there's another thing that, you know, you need to contrast this with, which is the fuel duty for motorists, which the government has now frozen for 7 years on the trot. So there's no increase in fuel duty, and in that same period, rail fares have gone up 30%. And that is completely unfair, and I really think it's indefensible to say
30%? That is disproportionate, surely.
What, sorry?
That is disproportionate.
I think that's putting it mildly. I think it's absolutely outrageous. And I can't understand why the government feels that they have to sort of treat the motorist well, but it's okay to sort of screw over the rail passenger year after year after year after year. There's just no justification for it.
The bit that I don't quite get here is that you're sort of trying to get the benefits of putting something in private hands, the element of competition and so on, and yet it's not really private enterprise purely, is it? Because, for example, the government are setting the fares. So how does that work? It's sort of privatised but regulated at the same time.
Well, absolutely right. It's kind of part privatised, and you can't please either. Obviously, you won't be surprised to hear that the unions want it renationalised, and that's kind of fair enough in itself. But the advocates of a free market, the real hardcore privatisers, don't like it either, because the train operating companies have so little room for manoeuvre. And they are sort of micromanaged for the Department for Transport. They're kind of doing the Department for Transport's dirty work and doing their best to sort of muddle through, really. It is true that the train operating companies take a profit out of all this, and obviously the RMT and others don't like that. But I think, you know, it is a relatively small profit margin compared to other capitalist enterprises, and they are running a fairly tight ship. And I think, you know, the fire needs to be aimed squarely at the government, not the train operators. Mm.
In terms of price, yes, but I know a lot of people who travel by train, and they say, okay, I'll pay those fares. I don't like it, but I'll pay those fares. But in return, I want a proper service. And the great thing about privatisation is you've got these professional service providers who are going to provide a great service with all the incentives of privatisation. But actually, what we see is often a very poor service.
Well, in some cases, that's true. I mean, again, it's the same story, though, that the train operating companies have very little room for manoeuvre because they don't get to choose which trains they actually run on the railways. Those are allocated for them by the Department for Transport. And so often passengers say, and quite rightly, well, look, this train is overcrowded. Why don't they just put on an extra carriage? Mm. The answer to that is they don't have an extra carriage and they're not allowed to buy them because the Department for Transport is micromanaging the whole thing.
So it's not one thing or the other then. It's half state controlled and nobody's winning, it would appear.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's a weird mishmash.
So what about the kind of Corbyn model then, which they don't seem to be saying renationalise it, but they're saying at least allow the state to bid for these franchises as well, and their argument is that there's evidence that it works. There's been some success.
What they're probably pointing to is the recent example on the East Coast Main Line where the franchise failed, and it looks like the current one is also going to end early, and the state had to step in to keep the service operating, and that was Directly Operated Railways was the name of the company, and they operated it for, I think, a couple of years, and it all seemed fine, and that's what the Corbyn will point to and say, well, look, it does work in state hands. Clearly, it can be, it can work in state hands. There's nothing to stop it happening, but it tends to be an ideologically driven thing. You know, the Tories won't renationalise the railway because that goes against the grain for them as sort of hardcore privatisers, and similarly RMT and Jeremy Corbyn, possibly for ideological reasons, want to renationalise the railway. I mean, you know, either works. We can have a nationalised railway, as we used to have, and we had with East Coast, as we may well have in the future, and we've had in Europe. But equally, the privatised railway is up and running at the moment. I took a train today, it was very comfortable, it was on time, and that was a privately operated company.
Mm. Another example they might point to in terms of state control is the London Overground and TfL. Generally, yeah, People are quite happy with that. In fact, I'd rather get an Overground train than I would a Southern train, for example.
Yeah, indeed, that's a model that we've sort of advocated for other franchises, so that the train operating company is just a contractor that is purely running the trains at the kind of behest of TfL or whoever it might be. Mm. And it does seem to work well, and I think that's possibly a way forward in the future. But I think, again, the government are going to be very reluctant to sort of, change the rules of the game and sort of, even if only slightly, they're giving up on the privatisation model. That might go against the grain for them.
And what about the state of the trains? Again, I'm sure you'll tell me it's not the fault of the companies concerned, but I read this analysis yesterday about how actually an awful lot of our train carriages are surprisingly old when you'd think they'd be state-of-the-art.
Yeah, I think I don't think the age is necessarily a problem. I mentioned just now that I travelled on a train today. It was an intercity train, and I was delighted to see that it was one of the old intercity 125s rather than the more modern Voyager. And these old trains are actually 45 years old, but it's an example of something that British Rail got absolutely right. And they are still, I think for many passengers, the nation's favourite train. So it's not the age, it's the actual sort of condition of the trains, the design of the trains, the ride comfort, the quality, and so on. And you sort of expect that to improve with newer trains. But it isn't necessarily the case. The other side of the coin is, you've probably heard of the much-hated Pacers, which are, a cheap and cheerful 30-year-old train, which no one loves, and hopefully we'll be seeing the back of very soon.
And do you think overall, though, trains are the future, or and we should be investing more and more money in railways, or is it actually old technology we need to look to other means of transport?
Absolutely not. I think the future for rail is very rosy, and despite despite the government's best efforts by whacking up the price every year to price us off the railways, it seems that we still love trains, and passenger numbers have doubled in the last 20 years. And, imagine London without a rail network. It would just grind to a halt. It's the most efficient
way. It's bad enough with one.
Exactly, yeah, but even worse. But it's the most efficient way of getting a huge number of people into a city centre in a short period of time. You just can't do that with road transport. And, for environmental reasons and speed reasons and safety and comfort and so on, I think the railways are going to be around for a very, very long time.
Bruce, thank you very much indeed. Bruce Williamson there from the campaign group Rail Future. There are going to be demos at 40 stations across...